Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:11 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is May 22nd. Well, when we look at the markets in here today, there were a number of notable events. Well, one was lumber. It was down, a limit down again today, so three consecutive days with limit down. And this is because they widened the limits. It used to be $10, now it's $15, and this is a reasonably large contract, so that has had the effect of increasing leverage on investors, and we're seeing that because it's opened limit down today and never moved off that level, that there is ample selling pressure here. If we look at the consistency of the trend, reactions of approximately $50 to $60 have been what might be considered in inverted commas normal, and this is a $55 reaction. So far an equal sized reaction, but it will absolutely need to hold and bounce soon if this is going to be limited to simply a small pullback within the context of a much larger uptrend. We cannot get away from the fact that this has been a clear accelerating trend and that it is way overextended relative to the trend mean, considering that the peak was at 648 and the trend mean is at 486, this is a really rather substantial overextension. And downside follow-through again tomorrow would greatly increase the potential that we've seen a peak of at least medium-term significance. What I find quite interesting is that when you look at the lumber ETFs, which are made up primarily of forestry companies, that they show little sign yet of encountering selling pressure. That would suggest that the action that we're getting in the lumber market has perhaps not yet followed through into what the consciousness of ETF investors. But if we continue to see a further decline in lumber prices, then that is quite likely to result in some selling pressure coming through in the timber markets. Then I'm writing a little bit today about Campbell's Soup. There are a number of interesting points to highlight about it. One is this process that a significant number of consumer staples and consumer discretionary type companies have had over the course of the last 30 odd years has been that the price has generally found support around a yield of 3.5%. 3.5% has been almost a magic number for these kinds of shares and dividend aristocrat type shares since the early 1990s. Every time the yield got to those levels, then the price bounced. But that is no longer the case. We're seeing an increasing number of these companies starting to see their yields cruise through 3.5%. There are two reasons for that. Perhaps the most pressing is the pressure that's coming on their business models. Consumption habits are changing, and they need to change along with those consumption habits. So that's proving difficult, and Campbell's Soups is not alone in having difficulties in that regard. Then a lot of people had been buying these kinds of shares because of their bond-like characteristics, and of at least of their dividends. But if we are at a point where their business models are coming under pressure, then and also because bond yields are rising, then the question is, are they going to be able to raise their dividends in an aggressive manner? If we look at the dividend record, or the record that that Campbell's Soups, for example, has of paying dividends, then we can see that it is not a dividend aristocrat, because there have been occasions when it has cut the dividend. Every time it's cut the dividend, it's stopped increasing it first. And the last time was back in the period around 2012 or 2013. It stopped raising the dividend 3 quarters ago, so there is the prospect of it cutting the dividend. But what I can see from this chart pattern is that it would appear to be already pricing that eventuality, and this is clearly an accelerating chart pattern. It has fallen from a peak of 67 to 34. So we're not far off a 50% retracement here. And this is a significant decline. There is a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean. And we're seeing tentative signs of at least a pause starting to come in here. That also, and a lot of these same arguments are applicable to the consumer staples sector, which has steadied in the region of 500. But perhaps the more important point is that it has fallen to break its progression of higher reaction lows that has been evident since the beginning of 2009. This is a significant trend consistency deterioration. And yes, there is certainly an oversold condition, but it has got some work to do if this is going to be the limit of the decline. Perhaps more important is that because we're seeing an increasing number of the constituents of this index, seeing their yields pushing through that magic 300, three, excuse me, 3.5% level, the question then will be, is that going to continue to hold for the broader index as well? That's I think turning into a rather large question. Well, of course, part of the reason that we're seeing bond or instruments that have gone bond-like characteristics pulling back is because of yields. And so far, the 10-year yield has held this move above 3%. There is a wall of additional issuance that is coming towards this market, and the Federal Reserve is really the only central bank in the world right now that is reducing the size of its balance sheet. So that is the clear argument for why yields are holding this move above 3%. The longer that situation persists, the greater the likelihood is that the breakout will transform into the beginning of a more sustained uptrend in yields. And if that is indeed the case, then that's going to have a knock-on effect for just about all of the bond proxies. When we look at, for example, the utilities index, then it has already encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean, and yes, it was a little bit steadier in here today, but at the very minimum, it's going to have to sustain a move above 700 to question the downward bias. This is n hasn't Well, it wasn't as consistent a chart pattern as the consumer staples was until the breakdown at the beginning of the year. So, because it's not as consistent a trend, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to analyze and probably needs a bit more room. But it absolutely needs to sustain a move above 700 to even begin to suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Then, if we simply recall the fact that treasuries have a yield right now of 3% and a change, and the 10-year yield in Australia has got a yield of 2.86%. Well, that is a big psychological level around 3%. But the problem is that now that there is a relative discount on the yield to treasuries, then people will be asking about the Aussie dollar. And the Australian dollar has been selling off for most of this year, and it also did pull back to break the progression of higher reaction lows, but not by an awful lot. There is the potential that we are now going to unwind the short-term oversold condition, but there is still a very clear progression of lower rally highs at the 76 cent level. Is a potential area of resistance, and the big question, therefore, is how much further is the dollar's pullback going to move? It was looking like yesterday that we had seen at least a very short-term peak for the dollar, and there was some weakness in the dollar index in here today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. That big fundamental fact that the Federal Reserve is the only central bank reducing the size of its balance sheet is a significant medium-term tailwind for the dollar, and it suggests that it is a buy on the dips rather than a sell on the rallies. If I think thinking about it in that way is probably probably the best way to think about it, that it's still a medium-term bullish environment as long as the dollar index is trading above the trend mean, but there is a short-term overbought condition, so it could consolidate above the trend mean, which means that there is probably about a point, a big number point of risk in the dollar index, but probably not an awful lot more than that. Against some of the emerging markets in here today, the dollar was a little bit softer, but again, not in a dynamic manner. The Indian rupee is up around the 68 level. This is approximating the region of the lows that we saw for the rupee between 2013 and 2016, and it bounced pretty emphatically from those areas, not least because the central bank in 2013 moved aggressively to support the currency. And we're going to have to see some form of action on behalf of the RBI I think, stiffen up the resolve of rupee investors that this is going to be the extent of the selling pressure. There is an oversold condition evident, so we do have the potential for a rally in here, but so far there's little sign of it evolving just yet. The Nifty index has steadied somewhat from the 10,500 area, but again, not in a particularly dynamic manner. And it really is for the bulls to prove at this stage. We are at a rather critical juncture for a number of these ASEAN indices. And for example, the Indonesian market was in mildly positive territory today, but closed below its open and well below the intraday high. And when we look at, for example, the Indonesian rupiah, then yes, it is oversold in the short term, but again, it is in clear need of a very clear dynamic in its favor to question the dollar's dominance at this stage. So there is still this outstanding question about the outlook for some of the emerging markets, and not least because we're getting a replay of the concerns that were being voiced back in 2015 when people were worried about dollar-denominated debt. That's particularly the case in places like Argentina or Venezuela. There is also a lot of dollar-denominated debt in South Africa, but the rand has not been the weakest of the currencies, and not least because there has been regime change in South Africa. Then Turkey is perhaps where the greatest risk is, because that currency continues to deteriorate. There was no sign today of some steadying in the lira, and it is now accelerating lower. That is likely to start to weigh on the stock market in a rather dynamic manner. Even that this is a nominal price index, so we're seeing that the index has steadied because the lira is declining so fast. But if we look at that on a currency adjusted basis, so by looking at, for example, an ETF, then we get a clear idea of just how deleterious the decline in the currency has been for investors. So these are, I think, significant issues, that there are a handful of emerging markets where there is real pressure coming onto their currencies, and it is going to require some really quite considerable corrective action. And there doesn't seem to be a great deal of appetite for that in Turkey, where Erdogan has dictatorial tendencies and is rather in favor of re-establishing the Ottoman Empire. There's probably a fat chance of that, but there is a strong likelihood the currency is going to get a nasty wake-up call from the bond markets. Well, thinking about nasty wake-up calls from the bond markets, the Italian bond yield was a little bit softer in here today. So some people, I think, beginning to think that the five-star movement and the League are not quite as close to forming a government as might have looked yesterday. Then you have the additional question of I think it's the BOPs or the mini BOPs, which are being viewed by the market as a way that Italy might try to circumvent the EU's fiscal rules. Well, there is the simple matter that the ECB has followed a playbook with places like Greece or Malta, not Malta, but sorry, excuse me, Cyprus. That it's when the bond yield gets scarily high that the very high borrowing costs that these governments, new governments with generally inexperienced teams, have to deal with, causes panic and they come back into the fold of the EU. Well, 2.3% is probably not going to do it. And the reality is that I think an increasing number of these smaller parties know at this stage that the only way that they can ensure their survival is to stick to their guns. That if they compromise or they're co-opted by the status quo, then the next time there's an election, their voter base is decimated, and people move on to whoever the next populist candidate is in the hope that they will, in fact, follow through on their electoral commitments. Well, we'll see whether the Italians, the Five Star Movement, or the League are in fact capable of delivering on what they said they would do. And that's obviously going to be rather difficult considering the fiscal straits that Italy is in. But they'll probably try. And what when we look at the chart pattern, we can see that there is a quite clear base formation. We're testing the upper side of the base. There hasn't been a downward dynamic, but there is a pause in the region of the upper side of the base, so we may see an additional pause, but the outlook continues to look like we're going to see additional upside. Now, there is an additional point that I think is worth mentioning, and that is that high-yield spreads in the US have been going nowhere for really quite a considerable time already. But that's something that is not the case in Europe. If we look at this chart, then this Credit Suisse European high yield bond spread has been trending higher since the latter part of last year. So what that suggests is that we are going to head into some additional issues with European high yield. And when you start to take that into account, against the background of what's going on in Italy, the fact that you still have the separatist movement in Spain, that Poland and Hungary are getting increasingly ambivalent towards the EU, then there is plenty of things to bear in mind when we look at the outlook for the stock market. Well, the Italian stock market has been the poster child for performance in Europe over most of the last year, and it did steady from the region of the trend mean in here today. And there is a well-defined base formation since 2009, and really a sustained move above 25,000 would confirm that that has been completed. But when we look at the Euro Stoxx index, it is coming back up towards this 400 level, and this does represent an area where we've seen pauses before. A sustained move above 400 would probably be contingent on some additional weakness in the euro, and that is certainly possible considering that high yield spreads are starting to rise, that peripheral spreads are rising, and that the ECB is in the process of tapering, but that it may have to reverse that decision if we see additional stress coming into the bond markets. If the euro goes down, then the nominal price of European equities is likely to rise. Then, if we look at Japan, the Nikkei was in slightly negative territory in here today, but perhaps the more important point is that it has bounced emphatically from the 20,000 level. And when we look at the longer term chart, one of the most important points is that every time over the course of the last 20 odd years that the Nikkei got back up towards that 20,000 level, it failed and went to a new low. But that stopped in 2016, that we had a higher reaction low, and now it is trading above the 20,000 level. And as long as it is trading above 20,000, we can conclude that this is a new bull market environment. And the return to outperformance that we're seeing in the mid-cap sector, whether that is in Japan or in Germany or in the UK or indeed in the USA, then What that is helping to, I think, ram home is that breadth is improving in the wider stock market. That if an increasing number of smaller companies are doing better, that's rather good news. The Russell 2000 was in mildly negative territory in here today. That is a very small key reversal. But downside follow-through tomorrow would be required to suggest a peak of short-term significance, and really a sustained move below 1600 would be required to signal a failed upside break. We may see some consolidation in considering that it did rather race to get from 1550 up towards the peak we saw this morning. Then when we look at the commodities complex, well, the oil price remains really quite firm, and I need to pull up the, in fact, the oil price. It was up 15 cents, but wasn't quite able to hold the move above $80 that we saw in the morning. Now, when we look at the medium-term chart, reactions have been limited to pullbacks of $5, and a reaction of more than that would be required to suggest that we've had a pause similar to what we had at the beginning of this year. There is a short-term overbought condition relative to the trend mean, and when we look at the commodity table, then what we can see is that there is no longer a backwardation at the front and second month. So what that suggests is that the supply deficit that was at the very front end of the month, or the front end of the curve, has begun to contract. There's still a substantial backwardation throughout much of the rest of the curve, but not right at the front end of it. And what that suggests is that we may be in for some pause in consolidation. The reality is that when we think about what the outlook is for the market, and the fact that we've had this really very impressive rally, well, we know that a rally up to $80 is the kind of rally that will encourage new supply into the market. If we go back and look at the longer end of the curve, that you could now hedge exposure in above $70 out to 2020, and that's an attractive price level for a significant amount of additional supply, and that is going to start to happen. We're going to see more drilling, we're going to see more supply coming to the market, the higher the price moves and the longer that those higher prices are sustained. So I think it is worth looking at the energy sector generally, because it has lagged the oil price, but it is now right at the upper side of the range that we've seen for about the last 18 months, and it is a bit overbought in the short term. So I think if we do see some pause in consolidation in the oil price, we are also going to see some pause in the major oil producers. Now, Royal Dutch Shell has Royal Dutch Shell has been rallying really very impressively over the course of the last few months, and it has broken very clearly through this 2600p level. But it's been going up in almost a straight line. Now, let me just update this chart so that we get the most recent part of the advance. And we can see that it has broken up and away from this very lengthy trading range, which is being characterized by acute bouts of volatility. But we also know that when the price accelerates in this kind of manner, that there is the potential that we're going to get some pause or consolidation. And the most important point would be that if it finds support around 2500p on the next pullback, well, then that would confirm the breakout and I think a really a change to a more bullish environment over the medium term. And the other share that was really drawing my attention, that was accelerating in here today, is Hermès. It had been trending higher in a very persistent manner, and indeed consistently since 2008. It had a rather shallow pullback relative to the subsequent advance in 2009. Then it was breaking out in 2010. Then we've had this staircase step sequence uptrend where reactions have been not quite as consistent as one might hope, but they have been one above another. And now the price is accelerating. It broke up and out of a more than year-long range in really at almost exactly the same time that the rest of the market was just finding its feet. And it was up in additional positive territory in here today. Well, this is probably the upper echelon of luxury goods. It's trading on an estimated PE of 48, and the yield is only about 0.75%. It's on a market cap of 63, almost 64 billion euro. So we know that the first clear downward dynamic is probably going to be a peak of at least near-term significance, and that considering that the price is currently at 600 and the upper side of the underlying range is at 450, well, there is a 25% risk on the downside when this eventually does roll over. But perhaps the other important point is the commonality that we're getting in the luxury goods sector, where it does appear that people are front-loading purchases because they're anticipating future inflation. So they are locking in their purchases today. So that, I think, is another instance where we're starting to see people beginning to take spending decisions based on inflationary expectations. And the fact that tips yields are testing the upper side of their range, and they haven't quite broken through 1% yet, but when they do, well, that will be an indication that people are worried about inflation, because there isn't any additional new supply of 10-year Treasury tips coming through. So this will be a clearer indication of what people are actually thinking about inflation, rather than the Treasury market, which has had where there are more moving parts essentially to the bearish argument. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.